light bag. Every available policeman has been assigned to search. Travis Field, California, Slick is back. The repatriated prisoner, who is said to have sold out to the communists, has informed them of the order.
Men say the winter was bad that year. Fuel was scarce and food was dear. A wind with a wolf's head howled about our door, and we burned up the chairs and sat upon the floor. All that was left us was a chair we couldn't break, and the harp with a woman's head nobody would take for song or pity's sake. The night before Christmas, I cried with the cold. I cried myself to sleep like a two-year-old. And in the deep night, I felt my mother rise and stare down upon me with love in her eyes. I saw my mother sitting on the one good chair, a light falling on her from I couldn't tell where, looking 19 and not a day older, and the harp with a woman's head leaned against her shoulder. Her thin fingers moving in the thin, tall strings were weaving wonderful things. Many bright threads from where I couldn't see were running through the harp strings rapidly, and gold threads whistling through my mother's hand. I saw the web grow and the pattern expand. She wore the child's jacket, and when it was done, she laid it on the floor and wove another one. She wove a red cloak, so regal to see. She's made it for a king's son, I said, and not for me. But I knew it was for me. She wove a pair of breeches quicker than that. She wove a pair of boots and a little cocked hat. She wove a pair of mittens. She wove a little blouse. She wove all night in the still, cold house. She sang as she worked, and the harp strings spoke. Her voice never faltered, and the thread never broke. And when I awoke, there sat my mother, with the harp against her shoulder, looking 19, and not a day older. A smile about her lips, and a light about her head, and her hands in the harp strings, frozen, dead, and piled up beside her, and toppling to the skies, were the clothes of a king's son, just my size.
Unstoppable mind, never fading. treasures up with brighter eyes and live the stubborn years. New fearful things, fresh courage takes. The clouds be so much very of good with living and shall wait in blessing on you. Judge not the Lord, thy people say, but trust him for his will. The eyes of frowning on him, eyes of smiling on him. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but the fruit will be the last. Blind unto me, be sure to live, and stand in good in them. God is his only faithful, and he will make it plain. I'd like to read a very strong poem, I think. It's Tiger, Tiger by William Blake. Tiger, Tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night. What immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful senses? In what distant heat or skies burns fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What hand dare he defy? And what shoulder and what art could twist the string of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread tension and what dread heat? What the hammer, what the chain? In what thing was thy brain? What the anvil, what the dread grass dare its deadly terror to strike? When the stars flew down that field and watered heaven with that field, did he smile with this? Did he who made the land make thee? Tiger, tiger burning bright in the forest of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry? Our next poem has a light touch, but it also has something of a moral. Well, it has an Aesop fable quality. I like it very much. It's so apt and so beautiful. This is The Nightingale and the Glowworm by William Cowper. A nightingale, that all day long it cheers the village with its song, nor yet at eve its note suspended, nor yet when eventide was ended, began to feel, as well he might, the keen demands of appetite. When, looking eagerly around, he spied far off upon the ground something shining in the dark, and knew the glowworm by his spark. So, stooping down from hawthorn top, he sought to put him in his crop. The worm, aware of his intent, harangued him thus, right eloquent. Did you admire my lamp, quoth he, as much as I, your minstrelsy? You would abhor to do me wrong as much as I to spoil your song. For 'twas the selfsame power divine taught you to sing and me to shine, that you with music, I with light, might beautify and cheer the night. The songster heard his short oration, and warbling out his approbation, relieved him, as my story tells, and found a supper somewhere else. Hence, jarring sectaries may learn their real interest to discern, that brother should not war with brother, and worry and devour each other, but sing and shine by sweet consent, till life's poor transient night is spent, respecting in each other's case the gifts of nature and of grace. Those Christians best deserve the name who studiously make peace their aim, peace both the duty and the pride of him that creeps and him that flies. Here is a warm favorite of mine, I hope of yours too. It's written by a woman, Christina Rossetti, and it's called When I Am Dead, My Dear. When I am dead, my dearest, sing no sad songs for me. plant thou no roses at my head, nor shady cypress tree. Sing the green grass above me with showers and dewdrops wet. And if thou wilt, remember. And if thou wilt, forget. I shall not see the shadows. I shall not feel the rain. I shall not hear the nightingale sing on as it may be. And dreaming through the twilight that does not rise nor set, haply I may remember.
Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing them, end them. Sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delays, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin? Who would fardels bear, to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death? The undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveller returns. Puzzles the world. And makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus conscience doth make cowards of us all. And thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er with the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pith and moment, with this regard their currents turn around and lose the name of action.
And now for the Golden Treasury. I'm happy we have the means of hearing another distinguished actor, John Gielgud, an outstanding interpreter of Shakespeare. You will hear now the famous passage from Richard II, as given by John Gielgud.
This royal throne of kings, this sceptred isle, this earth of majesty, this seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for herself against infection and the hand of war, this happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in the silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall or as a moat defensive to an house against the envy of less happier lands. This blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, this nurse, this teeming womb of royal kings, feared by their breed and famous by their birth, renowned for their deeds, as far from home for Christian service and true chivalry as is the sepulchre in stubborn jury of the world's ransom, Blessed Mary's son. This land of such dear souls, this dear, dear land, dear for her reputation through the world, is now leased out. I die pronouncing it, like to a tenement or pelting farm, England, bound in by the triumphant sea whose rocky shores beats back the envious siege of watery Neptune, is now bound in with shame, with inky blots and rotten parchment bonds. That England that was wont to conquer others hath made a shameful conquest of itself. Would the scandal vanish with my life? How happy then were my ensuing death.
And so we bring to a close today's readings from the Golden Treasury. My personal warm thanks to Jane Pickens. My profound gratitude to Laurence Olivier and John Gielgud.
General, wait. You need help.
Oh, no, do not go away. I may not still be here when you return. Look, they are going into play now. There is the bell. A little harmony is all I need. Listen.
You shall not die. I love you.
No, that is not in the story. You remember when Beauty said, I love you, to the beast that was a fairy prince? His ugliness changed and dissolved like magic. But you see, I am still the same.
I have done this to you. All my fault, mine.
You, I know. On the contrary, I have never known womanhood and its sweetness but for you. My mother did not love to look at me. I never had a sister. Later on, I feared the mistress with a mockery behind her smile. But you, because of you, I have had one friend. Not quite all a friend. Across my life, one whispering, silken gown.
I never loved but one man in my life. And I have lost him twice.
I would not have you mourning the less that good, brave, noble Christian. But perhaps I ask you only this. when the great cold gathers around my bones, that you may give a double meaning to your widow's weeds, and the tears you let fall for him may be for a little my tears.
Oh, my love.
Not here, not lying down. Let no one help me, no one. It is coming. I feel already shot with marbles, gloved with lead. Let the old fellow come now. He shall find me on my feet, sword in hand.
Cyrano.
I can see him there. He grins. He is looking at my nose, that skeleton. What's that you say? Hopeless? Why, very well. But a man does not fight merely to win. No. No. Better to know one fights in vain. You there, who are you? 100 against 1. I know them now, my ancient enemies. Falsehood. There. There, prejudice. Compromise. Cowardice. What's that? No. Surrender? No. Never. Never. Ah, you too, vanity. I knew you would overthrow me at the end. No, I fight on. I fight on. I fight on. All my laurels you have riven away, and all my roses. Yet, in spite of you, there is one crown I bear away with me. And tonight, when I enter before God, my salute shall sweep all the stars away from the blue threshold. One thing without stain, unspotted from the world, in spite of doom, mine own, and that is my white blue.
so, friends, we bring to a close the Golden Treasury. If you'd like to hear your favorite readers, please let me know. Just drop me a card at NBC in New York City. This is David Ross bidding you goodbye till next week's Golden Treasury.
Recorded on Sunday, October the 11th. 2:30 to 3 o'clock.
Your NBC Playhouse with Leonard Clark tonight on the NBC Radio Network. Your station, KSTP, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Today at the Paramount Theater in St. Paul, the ragtime to riches story of Grace Moore, entitled So This Is Love,